Now, as that music might suggest to you, we're heading from Africa and heading to Japan. Well, Japan and Richmond for the next story here this morning on North by Northwest. The Gull is the play as the centerpiece of the Steveston No Project. No, of course, a traditional play form in Japan. And the Vancouver-based Pangea Arts had an idea about doing a collaboration with Japan, producing a no play written in Canada. And Heidi Specht of Pangea Arts approached Daphne Marlott, poet and writer, to write such a play. And Daphne wrote The Gull, and it's the story of Japanese-Canadian fishermen in Steveston in about 1950. Now, last year, if you have a very good memory, you might remember that North by Northwest did a feature story on a Japanese no master who came to Richmond, two no masters, as a matter of fact, to work with the actors here and to work on getting this ready for production. There was a read-through last year at the cannery in Steveston. Well, a year has gone by, work has continued, the final pieces are going into place right now, and on May the 10th, The Gull is going to be performed for the first time ever in a special tent right outside Richmond City Hall. It's on from the 10th to the 14th. This past week, I got to go to UBC and meet a number of the people from British Columbia and from Japan who've been so involved in this very exciting international collaboration. First, when I was at UBC, I got talking to Heidi Specht, the woman behind this whole project and one of the founders of Pangea Arts. And I started by asking her how she was feeling about the fact that after all this time, things were finally starting to take shape with this project.
That's like the final piece. Of course, and then adding the costumes, our designers have been doing beautiful work, and I just can't wait to transport the audience to Steveston in the 50s and the moment when we hear those drums and the calls and everything coming together is... Actually, I've imagined so many times when we first got the first grant came through for Daphne to write the script, and in that moment I was imagining what will it be like on opening night when Daphne, I want to sit next to you at the show, and I just was imagining what is that moment going to be like, because that was, you know, this has been long, many years in the making, and it's a challenging process because of the logistics of working with artists who are living in another country, right, coming from a different performance tradition. And trying to bring us all together every time. We also have an artist from originally from Winnipeg and somebody from Toronto. So it's truly a national project, an international project. And so the logistics of getting us, having the money to get us all in the same place to work together has been overwhelming for a small company. But we did it, and long journey. But I knew it would happen, you know. When I have an idea, I make it happen. And my hook or my crook through all our obstacles. So now we just need the audience, and I know the audience is going to be blown away by this experience.
And the gentleman we're going to meet on the radio in just a moment, who's here to work with the masks as well. Tell me about him, Heidi.
Yes, it's Hakuzan Kubo is a Wakayama mask maker. And again, Wakayama is the sister city, and we really wanted, because the themes in the piece, the lead character comes from Wakayama, the over 75% of the original immigrants to the Steveston area were from Wakayama Prefecture. And so it's really exciting to us too. We wanted to involve more artists from the sister city. And Hakuzan is a student of and collaborator with Akira Matsui. They're both from the same city. And so when I heard that Hakuzan existed, I'm like, we want to work with him. And luckily for us, he took the challenge to involve himself in a contemporary no play versus a traditional no play. So he had to make some adjustments to what he was going to do with the mask. And he created two original masks for the show, and they're absolutely stunning. They're beautiful. And so, yeah, he came too as well. He's got an exhibit at the Richmond Museum, which goes until May 12th.
That is Heidi Specht of Pangea Arts. And now we're going to meet Hakuzan Kubo, and she was talking about him as the mask master who came over to work on masks for this play and to bring that show to Richmond.
Konnichiwa. Yoroshiku onegai itashimasu.
And Rick, hello to you.
Yes, thank you.
I've just been looking at some of the photographs of some of the masks here, and can you tell me a bit about the role of the masks in the NO form?
能面は、あの、まあ、能舞台の中では、
The NO mask, of course, is worn by the main actor. And the way he wears it, and of course, the role, his role is, of course, the main role. And so the NO mask takes on such an important role in the entire sort of creation of the NO play. He says he himself, he's still, as far as a mask maker goes, he's still very, very incomplete, but he's always very, very pleased, very grateful for Matsui Sensei, who often uses his masks and makes the mask also come to life.
So you must have to know a lot about the character and think about it and internalize it when you're thinking of how the mask will be for that character.
そうですね。あの、まずやっぱりこの自分が使ってる。
Yes, he says you really do need to understand how the mask is being used or how what the character is in a particular play. In fact, in traditional NO, there are a number of plays and certain masks will be used for several different plays. But in fact, sometimes it's nice to really be thinking of the character of a particular play when you carve the same mask. And he says, you know, if you really don't have that in mind, it's very difficult to create a good mask.
The mask for this play, can you tell me about it?
When he first heard about this, of course, he was very happy. He's from Wakayama, and of course, the story about the gull involves Japanese who had gone from a small village outside of the city of Wakayama. It's still in Wakayama Prefecture, the small village of Mio, and they had come to, of course, to Steveston. And, of course, he was very happy to be asked to make the mask. But he's a traditional mask maker. And how one can actually transform that into a gull mask is something that, he was at first a little concerned about. He talked a lot with Matsui Sensei about how that should be. But one thing he felt that it can't be just a straight gull mask, for example, just to imitate the face of a gull, because anything that's so clear becomes very limited. And in fact, the appearance in the first half of the play is of a woman who we're actually not quite sure. Is she a gull? Is she a woman? He feels like what will happen is that Matsui Sensei, in the context of performing this role, will with the costume and the context, will somehow bring that off where it'll both give the sense of it being a gull and give the sense of it being a woman.
Translation there from Richard Emmert, who is a NO expert from Japan as well, over for this production of The Gull. And before that, we heard Hasakan Kubo, the mask maker. We'll hear more in the next half hour here on North by Northwest about the production. Right now at 8:30, it's time for the CBC Radio News with Scott Regeer. Well, we're going to head back to our look behind the scenes at The Gull, the Steveston NO project. And a NO is a form of a drama form in Japan, a classical form, an ancient form. And Pangea Arts in Vancouver decided to put that form together with a Canadian story. And the Canadian story they've chosen is written by Daphne Marlatt. In fact, Pangea Arts asked Daphne Marlatt to write this story. Daphne Marlatt is an internationally recognized poet and novelist. She lives in Vancouver and has recently been made a member of the Order of Canada in recognition of her lifetime of distinguished service to Canadian culture. Besides the poetry, she's done a lot of writing about Steveston and about the fishermen and the life there. And that's what The Gull talks about, is this fishermen in Steveston who come back after the internment. This past week, I went to UBC where a number of people from Canada, various parts of Canada, and Japan are together and have been together working on the last phases of getting this production ready. The preview is May 10th, and the Gull runs until May 14th in a special tent right outside Richmond City Hall. If you're in Vancouver, you can just get on a bus and head right out to Richmond, Number 3 Road in Richmond, and it's May 10th to 14th for that show. Your chance to see the No Form and to hear this very, very local story. So when I was at UBC, I sat down with Daphne Marlatt as she was taking a break from watching rehearsals and asked her what it was like to be this close, after several years of work, to be this close to the final production.
It's really gelling now. It's so wonderful to hear them chanting next door as we're talking, because I know the rise and fall of the melodic patterns now. And then when the drummers come and they start drumming, and the kakegoe, the calls, the drummers' calls, are all put together with that, it's going to be wonderful.
Daphne, for those who don't remember what the story of the play is, can you give us a quick précis?
Yes. It's set in 1950 on the coast here. In 1949, the government lifted restrictions on the movement of Japanese Canadians. So for the first time, they could come back to the coast. And a very small number of fishermen came back in 1949. But a much larger group came back in 1950 because it was clear that it was going to work out and the union was going to accept them and so on. So this is set in 1950, and there are these two brothers who have lost their parents during the internment years, and of course their father's boat and home and everything was lost. So they have rented a boat from one of the canneries. The canneries wanted the fishermen to come back because they were known to be very good fishermen. So they've rented a boat, and they're following their father's route up the coast when a storm arises, and they go into Klemtu, which just was known as China Hat, to tie up for shelter. And while they're there, this creature appears on the wharf, and one brother sees her as a woman, and the other brother sees her as a gull. To the first brother, she is a young woman speaking in Japanese. To the second brother, she's just a gull shrieking at them. And as the older brother listens to her, and asks her some questions about what she's doing here, it turns out she's from Mio, their mother's village. And her story is very similar to their mother's. And that's all I'm going to say about it so far.
Daphne, why did you want to tell the story in the no play form?
It was Heidi Specht of Pangea Arts who proposed this idea to me. And when she phoned me up, she wanted to know, could I write a no play about the Japanese-Canadian fishing community in Steveston? And I thought, oh, this is going to be a big challenge. But I was also very excited by it, by the prospect of it, because I had recently been to Japan and I had seen no. I've always been interested in no since I first studied it a little bit in the 1960s out here at UBC. And I thought, it's such a moving form of theater. It's so contained and stylized. And yet, if an audience just opens to the experience of hearing the singing, watching the movement, listening to the words, it can be very emotionally moving. And to write a story about the effects of the Japanese internment, the Japanese-Canadian internment, to write a story about the effects of that on the community, it seemed the perfect vehicle for that.
It was so fascinating to me to think of this, Daphne, to take sort of one thing, getting your head around writing in a very different style, and also as much as you know and have incorporated and learned and written about what happened to Japanese Canadians, but just to really take that into your soul in order to be able to create a piece of art around that. It's quite a process.
It is, but it didn't seem a difficult process at all. And I think I've just been realizing that There was in Steveston for me when I first started going down there in the 70s. And I saw the last cannery camp. I walked through it. It had been abandoned at that point. There was such a strong sense of the impermanence and fragility of human life. Mm-hmm. Even the river itself is a symbol of what is constantly changing. And the estuary itself keeps shifting, you know, the more and more sand is deposited every year. So it was a site that taught me so much about how fragile our notion of democracy is, and also the largeness of the cycles, not only the cycle of the salmon returning, but the cycle of people's lives, people being totally uprooted and shifted 100 miles inland to an alien landscape, mm-hmm. and then gradually, bit by bit, returning. That was a big experience for me. So to put that into a no play, I mean, the no structure allows for that, the largeness of that.
You mentioned that when Heidi approached you, you thought it was going to be a challenge. How is it measured up on the challenge scale?
Oh, wow. Well, it involved a lot of learning on my end about the structure of no. It's a very, very musical structure. And Richard Emmert, the composer, has really been my dramaturg in all of this. So I had to learn the sequence, the normal sequence of musical passages, and then write according to those. And I know that classical no, the line, the poetic line, is the classical Japanese line alternating 7 and 5 syllables. And I didn't know how difficult it would be to write that in English. It actually turned out to be fairly easy. Okay. But then Rick explained to me, well, you don't have to restrict yourself too much on that side of things, because English is it's not a quantitative language, right. You know. It's a language of stress patterns. And to put that to no music, you have to be flexible. You know, he has to be a bit flexible. I have to be a bit flexible. So when we're sitting down together and going over actual lines, it was so interesting, because he would sometimes say to me, okay, I need one less syllable here, or I need one more syllable here. It was all this. He has been wonderful to work with, because he's done, through his own No Gaku troupe, which is dedicated to bringing no to the West, he has worked a lot with English no plays. And he really understands the dynamics of putting the English language to no music. So it was fascinating to work with him.
Having learned all this and having worked through this, do you see yourself writing another one?
Heidi is sitting right across from me, raising her thumbs. I'm amazed, after all the work involved in this production, Heidi, that you really are ready to do another one. But, well, we've tossed around the idea of doing another one. It'd be nice. I don't know. I'm sort of thinking it would be nice to totally break the convention and do an all-female no play.
Daphne, great to talk to you again. All the best.
Thanks, Jill. Good to talk to you, too.
And enjoy that opening night.
I will. Thank you.
So quickly the cloud bars shift. I see a form glimmering there. Can that be you, Mother? She is not in a form we can touch.
You hear the voice of Akira Matsui, and Akira Matsui is an internationally acclaimed no master. I actually met him last year when he came over to do some initial work with the actors in The Gull, getting them ready to understand how to do the chanting, the way the no play is formed, the chanting that you heard there from him and from one of the other actors. So in a break in the rehearsal, I sat down with Akira Matsui, who, by the way, has been designated an important intangible cultural asset by the government of Japan. And Richard Emmert again. And Richard Emmert is a no master in Japan. And he was here last year as well, collaborating with the artists, teaching the artists here. He's back again this time, again, working on the gull. And I sat down with the both of them to talk to Akira a little bit about performing the no form.
This is Akira Matsui. Matsui Sensei has traveled all over the world doing a lot of different kinds of performances. Of course, he's a very well-known performer in Japan, but I think one thing that's very special about him is that he, more than any other traditional no actor in Japan, he has traveled all over the world performing in a variety of other both traditional and non-traditional situations. He's led troops most recently. He went to, where was it, Dubai and Iran and
Oman.
He's taken troops to Russia. He's performed with troops that have gone to the United States, to Europe. He's come to teach in Canada and the United States. And this summer, for example, he's going to perform with a very well-known European director, Eugenio Barba, in a performance of Hamlet that's going to take place in Italy and then in Denmark as well. So,
you're busy.
Yeah, he says
he's very glad to be busy.
Yeah, truly. Now, you were here about a year ago working, both of you were here about a year ago working with the actors here and working with this play. What do you see this time as you come back?
1年前も来ましたけれども、どう変わってきましたか？いや、やはり一度と二度っていうと、やはり慣れてるっていうことが一番大事ですね。脳に慣れたっていうこと、歌いに慣れた。
The most important thing is, you know, you do something once, you do it a second time, and there's going to be improvement. And he says what he really feels is that everyone has become more accustomed to what we're doing. Last year we were starting from zero. I was here also in March, and we did a lot of rehearsal then. Now we have a third rehearsal period, and so it's just a matter of going over and over and now becoming much more accustomed and comfortable with what we're trying to do.
Why do you want to do that? Because of so many of the countries that you go to, obviously you are starting from scratch with troops there. I'm guessing that you are anyway. At some point you did. Why take on the work of doing that?
There are two things that he said. One thing, he says, by going out, he feels like he also understands a lot more about Japanese culture. Also, he feels that, that within Japan, there's a lot of Western culture that has been introduced into Japan. He says, on the other hand, there hasn't been that much Japanese culture that's been introduced to the West. And he feels that I think he enjoys both sides of it. And so this is a good chance for him to go out and do something he can do.
I'm interested about what you say about learning more about Japanese culture when you go abroad. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
If you're doing no only in Japan, you really only see that, and you really sort of can't see the context and what it is. He says from outside, there's he feels he gets the ability to look a lot more at what he's doing, what he's trying to do while he's in Japan. And, he's been coming outside for 35 years now. And so, I think he really sort of felt that, it was very strong the first time he came. And the first time, by the way, was 35 years ago when he came to Richmond, actually.
Really?
Yeah, the very first time he went abroad, and every time he left Japan, he was with a group of people in the sister city relationship between Wakayama City and Richmond. So he came with a troop, and that was the first time he's ever been abroad. And so he's traveled a lot since then.
I just want to ask one more thing with the mask. How does that change your presentation on stage or how you think about the role or how you perform it just to the use of the mask that way?
His training is as a no performer. And for him, compared to, there are some plays where he doesn't actually wear a no mask. He always feels it's so much easier to wear a mask than to not wear a mask. Because you really don't want all the emotions to come into the mask, but are into your face. And so when you're wearing a mask, that Instead, the issue is, how can you make that mask come alive? And of course, that's a part of his training. Mm-hmm. Says, of course, it's very, very different from what even how masks tend to be used in other, you know, cultures. But you know, his training is to communicate into the mask, making the mask itself come alive. And you can't do that with facial expressions. You have to use your whole body to do that. And so that's part of what he does. And of course, for him, he's been trained in that. That's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, right.
And so, for example, in a play, you might cry, but the mask isn't going to cry. In a realistic theater, you could show tears and you could maybe be able to look like you're crying, and that would communicate, you know, you're sad. But you can't do that with a no mask. And so you have to use the whole inner intensity and energy of your body to create that sense of sadness and tears. And so, you know, that demands, it puts a lot more intensity in your entire body, and that's something that oftentimes is missing in realistic theater.
Thank you so much for your time.
ありがとうございました。
Thank you.
And thanks again, Richard.
Yes, thank you.
Just a little music, a little of the chanting of the chorus from the rehearsal of the no play, The Gull, that I went to at UBC this past week. Now, that play is going to be on May 10th. That's the preview night, May 10th to the 14th, in a tent, a special tent that's been set up at the North Plaza at Richmond City Hall. And you can find out more about that by calling the Gateway Theatre box office. You can also get tickets there as well. And there's a chance for you to see something very special in the way of theatre, and that is the No Play, the collaboration between Pangea Arts and the performers and No Masters from Japan. The musicians just arrived last night and got into rehearsals, so quite an exciting time. And I have a pair of tickets to give away to a caller here this morning to go and see The Gull as part of the Steveston No Project. And I have tickets for the Thursday night performance. You can give me a call, 669-3733. That's 669-3733. And I'll give them away to caller number 2 here at North by Northwest.